Welcome back to another episode of Above Board with Canderpath. As you'll notice here today, you're going to hear my voice. It is Matt Marcoux. I am not flanked by my two buddies, the Rich B and the President John Kennedy, but I am here with a special friend. I have Mackenzie Herbert, our resident tax expert here at Canderpath. Well, one of the team members of our tax expert team is here, and we are going to talk today about some misconceptions that have come up with taxes and just sort of like maybe get some questions from the audience and maybe just hopefully you hear today's podcast and learn something new and something that's going to help you here in the future. So welcome to our episode here, Mackenzie. How are you?
Hi, I am good. Finally on the Above Board podcast. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about these tax assumptions.
Nice. You know, we had, I think, Raina on last time, another one of our very valuable team members, and we've had Michael on. So we kind of make the rounds with our Canderpath family here. We're excited to have you today. So we brainstormed and we're like, all right, what, you know, between the two of us, you know, we have a lot of tax expertise, but we want to make it sure that today's episode is exciting and it's not boring. And we're not talking about the Internal Revenue Service, although that is number four on our list here to talk about today. But I figured we would talk about some tax misconceptions, and we're gearing a lot today, not only to individuals, but also business owners, especially small business owners, and maybe those that are just starting off in the world of, you know, starting a business and trying to figure out how not only to be a business owner, but then also how to do their regular job, which is whatever it is. Here at Canderpath, we're financial advisors, but we also own a business. So there's really two sides to the equation there. And they're sometimes two very different things. So we're excited to talk about those things today. So let's start this off, Mackenzie. Where do we want to go first? What's our first question that we have that's often brought up during tax season?
I think I want to start it off. I think a good intro would be what to do if you're like a beginner with your taxes and like filing them yourselves or going to see a professional, you know, that kind of thing. Like what to do your first time.
Yeah, that's a really good one because, you know, I think with a lot of industries out there, there's required licenses and there's designations, and tax, oddly, is one of the few that anyone can do a tax return. You don't have to even be a professional. Like, you can't represent someone in front of the IRS unless you have some designations, but literally anyone can do it. And so I think it's a really good question is where should you go? What should you do? So there's obviously the self-filing option, which I think a majority of people do because a lot of it's not complicated, right? They work a W-2 job, you know, they have maybe some interest income or investment income or something like that. And it's pretty easy to input those things, especially like in a TurboTax where they basically ask you questions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I think going into before I started Canderpath and learned a lot more about taxes. That's how I filed my taxes. Like I had no other knowledge and I'm just going to self-file. It was more simple for me in my case. So.
And then as things get more complex, you need the higher level of skill, right? So someone who can look at it and not just put the numbers where they're supposed to go, but then work to optimize those numbers. So I think like the next level up then is talking to someone who does this on a daily basis. And that might be working with a CPA or working with an enrolled agent. You know, that's probably the next evolution after you try to self-file is try to look for someone who does this and who most importantly, not so much can file it for you, but when there's a problem, you have a place to go to. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the area that we serve here at Canderpath for our clients and really only our clients is the ability for them to come to us. And oftentimes it's a little bit more complex. So it's not just the W-2, it's not just a little bit of investment income, but maybe it's a rental property. Maybe it is, you know, they're doing something with healthcare and they're part of the Affordable Care Act and they're getting healthcare subsidies and we need to reconcile those. Or they have a fairly high tax bill and they've never planned for it. I know that's going to be one of the areas we talk about here in a moment, but they're mm-hmm. like, Matt, what do I do if I owe $10,000 to the IRS? Not only how can I solve that, which it's pretty easy, you need to pay them, but how do I avoid this in the future? Where's the planning aspect? And that's sort of the area that we are transitioning to right now. We're shooting this episode here at the beginning of May. Taxes were over about 2 weeks ago, and we've already gotten the first emails of, okay, Matt, what does it look like now for Matt and Mackenzie, really? What does it look like now for 2024? And either I owed a lot or I got a lot back. what do I do to, you know, sort of minimize or maximize that tax impact? And so we're doing a lot of pro formas here right now in the planning, right?
Yeah. And I also want to go back really quickly, because you like hinted at the designations. And a lot of times I think I've had a few people ask me to, you know, when they've heard that like I do taxes with CanderPath, that we're a CPA. And I think it's important to know not all tax preparers are CPAs. And I feel like a lot of people, if you don't have that knowledge, you think, okay, my situation is pretty complex, I have to go find a CPA. But I think it's important to open up the like spectrum to know, like reiterating what you said, Matt, like you don't have to see a CPA. You really don't even have to see an enrolled agent. But if it is a complex situation, an enrolled agent can represent you in front of the IRS. But I just think that is important to note, because I had no idea. Like I was under the impression that if I wasn't self-filing, then I had to get a CPA to do my taxes, which can be costly. And there are things that like I just didn't know. But knowing that now, I think that's really beneficial to have under my belt.
And a CPA is really a very broad designation. I mean, we actually have clients, we do returns for some CPAs, because not all CPAs deal in the tax world. A lot of CPAs deal in auditing or work in corporate finance or are on the bookkeeping side of the equation. And so while they're very good in their respective areas of concentration and areas of work, some of them are just like, you know what? Taxes are a completely different beast. And that's really why when we were looking from a designation standpoint here at CanderPath of which direction we should go, is a CPA is really the most broad, you know, designation you can get that covers a lot of the areas. In fact, an EA, which is what we have here at CanderPath, is a very narrow definition. In fact, an EA really only deals with the tax side of the equation. In fact, the entire designation and the testing that takes place is really all about tax law and has very little to do with bookkeeping, accounting, and those other kind of fringe aspects of being a CPA. So I think that's a great point. And listen, there's some out there that have neither one of those designations that are still assisting people. And I know I just got off the phone with one who has a master's degree in accounting and, you know, just has not had the need to sit for one of these designations and helps a lot of clients and business owners deal with how to properly file and educate them on the process. So again, it's one of the few businesses that I think that are out there that doesn't require anything, but really when things start to get messy or more complicated, and that's the point in time that you need someone who's going to be able to represent you or be able to know deep on any one of these particular topics.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So we discussed who we are and what we do. I think the next one is what happens if you owe the IRS? You just finished doing your return, right? So it's April 15th. You wrote a really large check and you're like, that sucked. What can we possibly do? So Mackenzie, what are some of the things that we do here for our clients to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, well, first is we recommend estimated tax payments, which me looking at it now, I'm like, that feels very obvious. But me looking at it 2 years ago, I'm like, what is that? I like didn't even know that was a thing. And I think that's very common for people that when you owe a lot, if you make your quarterly tax payments to the IRS, that will help minimize that payment that you have to owe in April. But also in order to help with some people that I'd say estimated tax payments are most beneficial for business owners because they don't work for a company that is taking taxes out of their payroll. But for people that do work for a company where they pull taxes out automatically, doing pro formas, which is something that we do, which is like a look ahead for the next year to kind of see like gauge where their withholding is at, see if there's anything we can do to help that to minimize the payment coming in April and help them kind of get ahead of that payment.
You threw a lot in there. So let's start. Let's slowly unpack some of those things. No, that was a great lead into it. So let's unpack it. So let's go first. You did your taxes, you owed a lot of money. All right. So what Mackenzie is saying is that, you know, you really have two ways to pay for your taxes. Either you have it withheld from your paychecks, or you have to pay it in yourself. Like it really even boil it down. That's the two basic ways to make sure that when you do file at the end of the, you know, in April, that you don't owe, you know, a ton of money to the IRS. You have those two options. So if you're a W-2 employee and, you know, you get your bonuses or you're getting stock compensation, you know, it's really, and that's probably the easier one for us to deal with, is it's fairly predictable. You typically have a salary, maybe you're in sales and it goes up and down, but we have a trend to go off of. And so what we do is look to see what your, you know, predicted taxable income is going to be, less any of your benefits, right? So if you participate in your company's 401k, you have a health savings account, which is a tax deduction. Some of those pre-tax items, we back that out of it. And then we look to see how much is withheld, how much has been withheld up to this point, and continue. We know how many pay cycles there are in the year. This math is fairly straightforward, and we can tell you with pretty good certainty either you're going to run a deficit and you're going to owe a big amount to the IRS come April, or you're running a surplus and you're getting a big, gigantic refund. Both of those are, by the way, not ideal, right? The most ideal thing is filing your taxes in April and hitting the nail on the head and both getting zero back and owing zero is the most ideal, but we don't live in an ideal world. It's much more complicated than that. So we increase our numbers here at CanderPath to plus or minus $1,000, right? Either you owe $1,000, you're getting $1,000 back, is sort of that world that we try to live in, which is imperfect, by the way, which it's really hard sometimes to predict those things. But so those are the two ways that you pay taxes. Either you write a check to the IRS or you have withheld. By the way, if you're going to write a check to the IRS, they want their money over the course of 4 payments. So they don't want you to write all of that big check in on December 31st. They actually want some in April. They want some in June. They want some in September. And they want some in January of the following year. So we typically break those up into 4 installments because that's how the IRS wants it. Now, what happens if you don't do 4 installments? You decide to do 2 or 1. They figure out how much you should have done and they'll apply some interest, maybe some small amount of penalties associated with it. It's typically not that big of a deal, but our goal is to try to make those nice 4 equal installments throughout the year. So yeah. We talked about how you pay it. We talked about why you should either, you know, make an estimated payment or increase withholding. But we have some clients who only have investment income or only have real estate income, and they're not small business owners. They're retirees. And so, you know, we maybe recommend having those estimated or having withholding come from Social Security. Or again, if it's a rental properties, we can kind of figure out what's that rental income coming in and figure out what the tax impact is going to be and try to make those 4 equal installments over the year. I think for a lot of people though, it's a royal pain to remember 4 times a year to do it. There's some automated approaches that we have and some ways to make it a little bit easier. But the key to remember is that if you owed a lot of money this year, there's a likelihood it's going to be the same if nothing has changed. And you gotta break the cycle at some point. And I think Mackenzie, you hit on this and we'll talk about this next, is a lot of small business owners, especially the first handful of years that they start a business and income starts coming in, they get slapped with a humongous tax bill. And let's talk about why that happens.
Yeah, so I mentioned it previously. When you are self-employed, you're not working for a company that's automatically taking those taxes out. And for somebody who, let's say you were a W-2 employee, that was coming out, because it automatically comes out, it's probably not on the top of your mind. If, say, you leave that company and you go and you start your own business, hey, I need to account for taxes. And I feel like it's so common for people who start a business and they're doing great. It's really successful. They're accounting for their expenses and everything, but nobody's looking at taxes. And that is income coming in and you have to pay taxes on that. That's how it works. So I think it's very common. People, new business owners, they get a very large tax bill, and that's why, you know, we're kind of stressing the importance of making those calculations to understand why you need to make those 4 quarterly payments and how to do them as well.
Yeah, so that's a great point. And again, especially for those small business owners, remember, they're not just paying federal income tax. They're also paying FICA tax, which is the Social Security and Medicare tax. And often when you're a W-2 employee, your company pays 1/2 of that tax bill for Medicare and Social Security, and you pay the second half out of your tax withholding. But again, as a self-employed individual, that amount is 15.3%. So every dollar that comes in, you know 15% of it is going to have to pay for FICA tax, which is, again, Medicare and Social Security. And then the rest of it is still going to be federally income tax. You're not getting a double tax. It's just employees typically have that withheld from their paycheck. And when it gets deposited into their checking account, it's net of all of that. When you're self-employed, you're getting. And actually, I just talked to an amazing tax preparer who we partner with a lot of tax preparers and a lot of CPAs in our area, both here in Orlando and also in Lakeland. But I just talked to an awesome tax preparer in Lakeland who deals not only with taxes but bookkeeping. And he actually made a recommendation, which I figured I'd share with everyone today, is for those small business owners who are trying to get their feet off the ground and maybe got smacked with a big tax bill, is take a look at a book called Profit First. And Profit First is from the perspective of someone giving advice to a small business owner. But the main point of it is to be able to split out your bank accounts in such a way that from a bookkeeping standpoint and also from a tax standpoint, you have it all split out. So if a dollar comes in from sales or the whatever business you have, that dollar doesn't just go into a single checking account and you have to figure it all out, because you actually split it out by having multiple checking accounts. And if you've listened to other shows we've had here on Above Board, is John actually prescribes to this with his personal life on his personal budget, is a dollar comes in from revenue, is it actually gets put into various buckets from a budgeting standpoint. But that's no different than what small business owners need to work on as well. So I think that's a great point, and I'd love you guys to check out the book Profit First and see if that gives you a little bit of insight.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to our show. Are you looking for shorter daily episodes of Above Board delivered straight to your Amazon Alexa? Join CanterPath 365 and get our daily brief with market updates, financial news, and mini podcast snippets like from today. Sign up now at CanterPath365.com and we'll see you there.
So we've talked about taxes and taxes and more taxes. What's next on our list, Mackenzie?
I think with the continuation of taxes is the IRS.
Okay, the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, which doesn't, by the way, make any tax laws. That's actually done by Congress and the legislature. Their job is to enforce the tax laws. And I think they get this like big, scary, reputation, right? And yeah. I'd love to hear from your perspective as someone who is just entering the tax world and now has worked with them and can see what they're like. But before, I think they were like just this big enigma to you, right? They're this like big, scary entity that's just behind the scenes tracking everybody.
Yeah, honestly, the IRS has a terrible reputation, I feel like, for people who don't have just an understanding of the tax world and what it is. For me, like I said, 2 years ago, the IRS, I was just like, I had no care in the world. I didn't understand the importance of it. I just always felt like the IRS was this big, scary thing that wanted to take everybody's money. And I feel like a lot of people have that kind of understanding of the IRS. And I honestly just feel like they have this bad rep because, a lot of people have to pay in taxes to the IRS. But the way that I look at it, which my father-in-law, he said this thing, it's so silly, but there was this post we saw one time where if you take the IRS and you put it together, it spells theirs. And basically it's theirs. Like the money you have to pay into the IRS is already theirs. And if you have a bill that you're paying in, that's just money that was already theirs and you just didn't pay in throughout the year. And the same goes for a refund. If you're getting a refund, that's money that you paid to them that was already theirs, but you paid too much. So they're just giving it back to you. And working in the tax world now and having that general understanding of just, this isn't money that they're taking from us. This is money that is already due to them throughout the year. And it just feels like this big scary thing because tax season between the months of February and April, it all happens so quickly. And then you just get slammed with a tax bill or a refund. But truly, taxes are being accounted for the whole year when you get paid, and taxes are coming out of your W-2, or again, if you're self-employed and it's coming out through your quarterly payments or Social Security, taxes are coming out. Taxes affect every part of our life. So it feels like this big scary thing. It feels like these mean people that are taking money from us, but it's theirs. So
That's a really good point. And we deal with them pretty closely now. Their job is enforcement, really. And I think probably most of their job is not enforcement, like you said, to be the police. I think a lot of it is just honest mistakes are being made. And I think part of the problem is that there are maybe some people out there that should not be doing this, or people who do it on their own and are doing it incorrectly. We see mistakes constantly come across us as we review clients' returns or you know, someone gets a letter. And most of the time in these situations, it's someone forgot to put a number someplace or didn't add a form to their return. And the IRS is just simply coming back and saying, hey, you missed something. What's funny is the IRS knows your taxes before you file them, because every single tax document that you receive, whether it's a 1099 or W-2, if you notice on those forms, it states this is being provided to the Internal Revenue Service. So much of what they do is actually automated. In fact, they have a completely different arm of it called it's basically the automated underreporting system, the AUR system. And so whenever our clients get a letter or something from the IRS, in fact, most of the time, there's not like some scary agent sitting out there. It's their computer system stating, someone sent us a 1099 with your social security number. And when we match that up to your tax return, we didn't see that 1099. And there's a problem there. Either someone sent us something incorrect or you forgot to do it. Most times it's you forgot to do it, right? It was maybe mailed to the wrong address or you put the wrong number on there. Listen, we are all human. And typing numbers in, especially we do 150 returns, sometimes there's a fat finger and you just, a 4 becomes a 1. It's really rare and we have a lot of checks and balances to make sure that that does not happen, but we're all human. So a lot of what their enforcement is basically just correcting mistakes that have occurred. Now, part of that problem is that they're inundated so much that it takes about 2 years for them to find those mistakes. So you've already lived your life. 24 months later, you get a scary letter in the mail. And now you have to remember, goodness gracious, what happened 2 years ago when I filed this? Like, what was actually missing? And also, they start penalties and interest from that time. Most of their penalties and interest are not punitive in nature. They're not trying to bankrupt you. That would be bad. What they're trying to do is stop from mistakes occurring and discourage those in a lot of ways. And if it's a first-time mistake, if it's something truly innocent, the interest that they're charging can't really go away because that's actually by legislature required. But sometimes their penalties can be what we call abated. And we can say to them, hey, listen, this was an honest mistake. A number got transposed. A 1099 was missing. We're going to get that corrected. We're going to pay the tax bill. That doesn't go away. But some of those penalties that you've assigned to it, is there a way for us to get kind of this one-time grace? And we've really successfully in a lot of instances where mistakes that have occurred, a client comes to us with those letters or a mistake has been made, we're able to get sometimes those things waived. Not all the time, because IRS says, well, this has happened 3 or 4 times. We're definitely going to charge you this penalty. But in a lot of those situations, we're able to reasonably work with them to come up with a very amicable outcome. And again, that's just knowing who to go to, what to do, how to fix it. And again, in most of these situations, in fact, I can't even think of a client that we've actually had get audited, because I think to the second point that you're making, that you made, Mackenzie, on the conversation, is they're not some big scary entity. As long as you're not doing something that's illegal and, something that is truly criminal in nature, they're not here to levy and take your home or garnish wages. They're trying to enforce the laws. And you kind of mentioned the word theirs. If with a little bit of planning and some estimating, you can figure out of those paychecks, of that amount coming in, whether it's a small business owner or while you're a W-2 employee, what amount is theirs that you are either using right now and you're going to pay back in April, or what amount that you've paid too much into? Because I think that's going to be one of our next topics that we talk about, is what happens if I get a $10,000 refund. That's almost just as bad as owing $10,000. I know it doesn't seem that way. I had one client at one point say, Matt, that's my forced savings for a vacation that we take every year. And I'm like, okay, there's way better mechanisms in place to be able to do that. But all of this comes down to planning. And the IRS is not some big scary entity. They're not here to put you in bankruptcy or put you in jail. They're here to really stop those that are skirting the system and are participating in tax evasion, not tax avoidance, which, by the way, tax avoidance is completely legal. Tax avoidance is why we actually file our taxes, because again, they already have a list of all of our 1099s and W-2s. They know what our tax bill is. It's now our job to say to them, based upon what you think the tax bill is, I have healthcare deductions. I've given to charity. I have capital losses that I want to offset capital gains with. That's really the point of doing taxes, is to provide them information that they don't already have. And that's really what that reconciliation on your tax return is they don't know how much you've donated to Goodwill. That doesn't show up on a tax form someplace. That is something we have to provide to them. That is the reason why we do our taxes. is so that we can provide them information that they do not have. And as long as it's fair, as long as it's reasonable, as long as it's within, you know, actually occurring, then there's nothing really to worry about, even though sometimes it's scary to see those letters show up, and we get them all the time. So I'm sort of immune to it now when we get an IRS notification. Most of the time, it's telling us something either legislatively that changed, or, hey, we did notice an issue with something and we need a clarification on it. And then we're able to, you know, kind of hop in and figure that out.
Yeah.
So they're not big and scary. We're able to talk through them. Okay, let's finish this up here with our conversation today. What's our last topic that we want to chat with everyone about?
Yeah, you just mentioned it, about $10,000 refund. That is not a reason to celebrate. I know a lot of people get really excited and they get a big refund and they think it's free money, but it's not. It's not a reason to celebrate. Do you want to dive more into that, Matt?
I do. You know, you've basically given, and it's not a interest-free loan. The IRS actually does grant you interest. It's kind of odd to say this, but if you do get that $10,000 refund, you might get a letter or a check later on in the year that here's the interest because we've borrowed your money all that year. I can tell you, though, it's not going to be anywhere near what you can get right now in a money market account or a CD. And I think to Mackenzie's point, that's your money. So you've lost the ability to use that throughout the year. Now, a whole different discussion if having that money, you would have not saved it. And I think that there is some legitimacy to that. And that goes back to budgeting. That goes back to financial stewardship and some of those conservative things we talk about here in the office. But I think that's a really good point, is it really just goes back to planning. If you can, throughout the year, know what's coming in, know what's being withheld, know what those deductions are, know all those types of things, then you can accurately change your withholding on your W-4 and increase or decrease that number. Or if you're a small business owner, you can adjust those quarterly estimated payments so that you're not overdoing it. And, you know, basically giving the IRS an interest-free loan not even interest-free, really losing the opportunity cost of that money, which could be used to something every day. Again, if that's $10,000 or $12,000, that's $1,000 a month that could have been put back into your budget. Now, again, you might have blown that on something crazy. But if you, again, have some of these good stewardship financial principles, then it's better in your hands than it is in theirs. So, you know, I love that. I love that point.
Yeah. I also just want to say, I want to close out with, I've been saying this thing so much, but tax awareness, I feel like it's so important. Like, it all boils down to having an awareness of taxes. And like Matt said multiple times, just planning. That's literally all it goes back to, is just planning your taxes around your income, any money that you get, and just kind of having that understanding. Because I've said it multiple times, me 2 years ago, I did not plan for taxes. I didn't know anything about it. It was this big scary entity to me. But knowing now, it's very simple. It's just planning around it. And that way, when that April 15th deadline comes around, you aren't shocked or facing this terrible bill or celebrating a $10,000 refund. It's very, like Matt said, the goal is to just have zero refund and zero balance due. So I think I just want to stress the tax awareness side of it. I think it's just so important just to educate yourselves and everyone listening about what taxes are, like, and what that means.
I think what's also really good is providing a resource. So where can you find more information? Head on over to our website, kandrapath.com. We have a blog on there with a lot of information, and then there's ability to contact us. If you have a question, let us know. We'd love to hear from you, be able to answer questions, dispel any myths that are out there, and make sure you guys are all set up for financial success. So on behalf of Mackenzie Herbert, myself, Matt Marcoux, the Rich B, and the Prez John Kennedy, thank you so much for listening to us. We appreciate all of your support. Hope you have an awesome day.